accountable. Let's get response now from Heidi Jo Castro. She's in Washington, D.C. Heidi, so President Biden coming out now, making that statement, saying Russia's unprovoked and unjustified attack on Ukraine. What more did he have to say?
That's right, Darren. And since then, there has been yet another statement from the White House, this worded by the president himself following a phone call that President Biden had with the president of Ukraine. And in it, I'll just read it to you. President Biden says, President Zelensky reached out to me tonight, and we just finished speaking. This was right before midnight Washington time. I condemn the unprovoked and unjustified attack by Russian military forces. I briefed him on the steps we are taking to rally international condemnation, including tonight at the UN Security Council. President Zelensky asked President Biden to call on the leaders of the world to speak out clearly against President Putin's flagrant aggression. And Biden goes on to say, and to stand with the people of Ukraine. Tomorrow, I will be meeting with the leaders of the G7 and the United States, and our allies and partners will be imposing severe sanctions on Russia. We will continue to provide support and assistance to Ukraine and the Ukrainian people. And tomorrow is when President Biden has a scheduled call with the G7 leaders, and we're expecting him to announce this full raft of sanctions against Russia around noon time to the American people. Darren.
Heidi, so, yeah, let's just stick with those issues in terms of sanctions and response, because as part of Biden's reaction statement, he said that the U.S., its allies and partners will respond in a united and decisive way. So now we're talking about further sanctions. What will those sanctions look like, do we think?
Right. We don't have the exact details, but today the White House did say that there would be no financial institution in Russia that is safe from these potential sanctions. We know what the White House, what the U.S. has levied thus far only accounts for the first raft of sanctions. Those are sanctions targeting the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, as well as two Russian banks and the sovereign debt. So there has been a lot of room for further maneuvering in terms of financial sanctions, what they may be, targeting further financial institutions in Russia. And there is talk of the Treasury Department have export bans on U.S. technology to Russia, which could hurt as well. But what's also telling in the statement, not only from Biden, but also from a statement from the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, is that now the U.S. and allies will be meeting not only to talk about how to punish Russia for having taken this action, but now further deterrence that will shore up the NATO allies. We know that the Defense Secretary, as well as the U.S. State Secretary, will be talking with NATO tomorrow to discuss that very issue, how to further deter Russia from potentially attacking NATO territory.
Heidi, let me get a final thought from you. I mean, how is this crisis playing out politically for President Biden? I mean, he faces accusations of being weak over Russia, and that these latest U.S. sanctions, which were announced a few days ago, all rather tepid and ineffective. Is this proving to be his most difficult foreign policy challenge yet, do we think?
Well, at this point, Congress is actually giving bipartisan support to the president, which is a rare thing these days. But we're hearing statements from senators of both parties saying that the U.S. and its allies must respond to Russia's aggression in a way that's decisive and devastating. So the two parties, Democrats and Republicans, are united so far in backing the White House's actions on this. Yes, like you said, Darren, there has been criticism about when these sanctions should have been levied, perhaps earlier as more of a deterrence. But now that Russia has taken this adversarial step, as it's perceived here in Washington, it seems like most of Congress, both parties, are united behind the president's actions.
All right, Heidi Jo Castro live for us there in Washington, D.C., I think. Yes, it is. Heidi, thank you. Well, fighting has been ongoing in eastern Ukraine for years. In 2014, separatists carved out territory highlighted in yellow from Ukraine's Donetsk and Luhansk provinces. They declared their own people's republics, which are recognized only by themselves, and now Russia. Overall, about 2 million people live in Donetsk province and 1.5 million live in Luhansk. Many, especially in the rebel-controlled areas, have obtained Russian passports. Both provinces are industrial hubs dominated by mining, with vast coal reserves, an important asset for all sides. It's estimated at least 14,000 people have been killed in fighting for control of the regions in the past 8 years. So let's hear now some of the televised address that Russian President Vladimir Putin made as he announced the military action earlier and told Ukrainian forces to retreat.
We urge you to lay down arms immediately and go home. I will explain. All servicemen of the Ukrainian army who comply with this requirement can freely leave the area of military actions and return to their families. Whoever would try to stop us and further create threats to our country, to our people, should know that Russia's response will be immediate and lead you to such consequences that you have never faced in your history. We are ready for any outcome.
All right, let's go live again to Dorsa Jabari in the Russian capital. Dorsa, so Russian President Vladimir Putin ordering what he's calling this special operation in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine. He says the operation is to protect civilians there. What more details have emerged about the military operation first?
Well, as you can imagine, the Russian military is very tight-lipped about what is taking place on the ground with their borders of with Ukraine. Now, you have to remember, this country shares a border with Ukraine that is about 2,300 kilometers. Of that is the 300 kilometers of that is a sea border, and about 2,000 of that is a land border. And I think what we're hearing now, reports of the Russian military going in from various sides of Ukraine, from the east, from the west, and now from the north. North in Belarus, allegedly, it's clear that this is not just any operation, a small military operation in the eastern region of Donbass, as the president had said. What will be the reason for all of this? We'll have to wait and see, because many of the residents here in Moscow I spoke to yesterday, commemorating what is their version of Remembrance Day here in Russia, they said that they couldn't possibly fathom the idea of going to war with Ukraine. Ukraine is their neighbor. It's part of their family. They're all brothers and sisters. And there really is no justification for launching a full-scale attack on Ukraine at this time. They said that this was all rhetoric, but now we see what is unfolding in the images that we're seeing now, a full-scale attack in Ukraine.
Yeah, Dorsa, and as we've seen over the last few days, the language coming from the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, became even more hard. It became more bombastic. Talk us through, for our viewers who are just tuning into Al Jazeera now, the sequence of events, the timeline over the last couple of days in terms of Putin's moves in eastern Ukraine. What happened right up until today?
Well, this all began with an extraordinary session of Vladimir Putin's Security Council on Monday. We saw about an hour and a half video of that meeting that had taken place earlier in the day. And it was very interesting because nobody in this country, very few people, had seen these high-ranking officials ever speak in public. And they were answering questions to the president, who had a number of questions for them about various things, about the country's security, about the military, about sanctions. He asked Sergei Lavrov, what are the status of Western sanctions? And Lavrov told him that basically the West is going to impose sanctions on us no matter what we do. And then a few hours later, there was an address to the nation that was also a tape message that was broadcast on state TV by Vladimir Putin on Monday evening, in which he declared independence recognition for the separatist regions of Donetsk and Lugansk in eastern Ukraine. Those separatist leaders were also present with Vladimir Putin at the Kremlin, where they signed official decrees. And that decree went to the Duma, that is the state legislature here, on Tuesday, and parliamentarians solidified Putin's decision. They verified it. And then at the same time, we heard from the upper house of parliament here, where they said they had a request from the president to be able to deploy troops wherever and whenever he seemed fit. And parliamentarians in the upper house voted unanimously, 153 of them, to grant Vladimir Putin permission to send Russian military troops anywhere in the world at any time that he saw it was necessary. I think that was the point where we realized it was
inevitable that some kind of a conflict would occur. But on Wednesday evening, we heard from the separatist leaders in those regions in eastern Ukraine asking the Russian military for assistance, saying that they were under attack. And that is the decision that was then taken by Vladimir Putin at 6 a.m. local time in Moscow, where we heard the president saying that he was sending a military unit deployment of troops to Donbass to assist the separatists there. Of course, what we're seeing now unfold is a much broader scale invasion of Ukraine since that announcement was broadcast. And I think a lot of people will be very shocked at the images and the news once the city is fully awake.
Dorsa, we're just hearing from the Reuters news agency from the Ukrainians who say they've shot down a military aircraft in Ukraine. Obviously, that's just coming to me now. I'm hearing it here. So you probably haven't heard it in Moscow yet. However, let me ask you, is it perhaps too early to start making an assessment of the scale and the scope of the Russian military operation? We know we have this issue of the special operation in the Donbass region. As part of the military umbrella operations, we have this shock and awe in terms of the other big Ukrainian cities. But is it too early to start talking about the scope and scale of the operation just yet? And what would be the objectives then?
Well, Vladimir Putin had said in the past and reiterated this week in all the speeches that he's made to this nation and the world that he wants Ukraine to lay down their arms. They want to demilitarize Ukraine. They don't believe Ukraine should exist as a sovereign nation and that the leadership in Kiev is very weak and being used as a puppet by Western countries. And I think we expect this to continue for at least another week. We have just heard from Russian officials who have said that they are temporarily suspending flights to a number of airports until the early hours of March 2nd. So I think that gives us an indication of how long we can expect this to go on. As to what Russia is trying to achieve, I think it's clear now that they want to take full control of this country because they see it as their ambitions to join NATO as very much a threat, which is what got us here, really, in the first place, according to the Russians. They didn't want NATO to expand further eastwards and certainly didn't want Ukraine to become a member of NATO. And now we're seeing the events unfold on the ground there as a result of what Vladimir Putin had called very much a security threat to this country. I want to say that on Monday evening, during his first televised address to the nation, where he declared those two states as independent states in eastern Ukraine, Vladimir Putin said to the West that you didn't want us to become friends, but you didn't have to make an enemy of us. And I think those words now are very much becoming clear what is unfolding, what we're seeing now in the coming hours, in the past few hours that we've seen. Vladimir Putin very much feels that he was cornered, and now he has taken things really to the extreme.
Dorsa, just a final thought to you. You were saying that yesterday Russia celebrated its equivalent of Remembrance Day, remembering those killed in past conflicts. How do ordinary Russians, people on the street, feel about what is a massive operation now in neighboring Ukraine? And many Russians live in Ukraine, many Ukrainians live in Russia. These, you know, both sides have historic cultural connections going back for many, 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 many years and centuries. How do ordinary Russians think about what's going on?
Well, I think in the coming hours it'll be much more clear, but I really believe the initial response will be shock. I don't think most Russians will believe Vladimir Putin has decided to take this decision to this scale. I think many of the analysts I was speaking to over the past few weeks, and I've been here now for nearly 7 weeks, and I think many people initially when I arrived in Russia in early January, the concept or the prospect of any kind of conflict on any scale was completely preposterous to everybody I spoke to. And over the past 2 weeks, it's become a different narrative. Many analysts said that they believe some kind of an incursion was possible, given what had happened on the diplomatic front. But the ordinary Russians actually, from the beginning until now, until yesterday, they refused to believe that this was ever going to happen. They said there is no reason for Russia to invade Ukraine. There's no reason for Russia to launch a full-scale attack on Ukraine. There is no sensible justification for this to happen. And I think Vladimir Putin has laid out his reason, whether or not the Russian population will be able to fathom that and accept that, we'll be asking them in the coming hours. And I think it will be very difficult for them to really get behind this decision at this point, because this war will have casualties. And I think those casualties will be massive. And the people we spoke to yesterday who were remembering those soldiers that have lost their lives in previous wars said that we have hoped we've learned our lessons from the past and they won't be repeated. But I think today's events make it clear that those lessons have not been learned.
All right, Dorsa Jabari, live for us there in Moscow. Dorsa, thank you for that. Let's cross over back now to Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, and talk to Andrew Simmons. Andrew, we've been talking to you for the last couple of hours when the bombs started falling. Just bring us up to date with what's happening now. What have you been seeing and hearing in the last few minutes or so?
Well, there has been a fairly large explosion just recently. We weren't sure whether that was outgoing fire or incoming quite nearby. But there's been something of a lull this past hour. Air raid sirens were wailing away in the city. And the picture's becoming a bit clearer now. It would appear that the centre of the city has not been attacked. It would appear that military installations have been the target, and there have been missile attacks, bombing, aerial bombing, we think, but that's not been confirmed. And the casualties and the levels of damage is unclear, but the whole sky was awash with red and orange when these missiles struck. Apparently, some of them were cruise missiles, and the main international airport did come under attack. It's unclear what the damage is there, but all airspace is closed. We've heard from President Volodymyr Zelensky. He actually took to Facebook to announce what was happening. It seemed to be in a safe place in his own residence. He said Russia was conducting strikes and shelling on the military infrastructure of his country. He declared martial law. He said, "We are strong. We are ready for anything. We will win." And now how that came across with the traumatized people of this city is unclear. What we're seeing right now is some families with bags evidently moving out. I've just seen some children taking their pets, their hamsters, their dogs, and their mother and father walking alongside. It is very likely that people will actually leave this city in what sort of numbers, we're unsure. But it has to be said, people apparently have been panicking in the city centre because the sheer sound of these explosions, it was rocking the city, echoing around the buildings. It was very, very terrifying for people who are unused to this sort of thing. Although, having said that, Ukraine is a pretty resilient place because they've had this hybrid war with Russia for 8 years now, 14,000 people dead, that in the Donbass region, which is really the whole heart of what's happening now. Now, let's just try and bring you up to date with where the main attacks have been. Here in the capital, we are also hearing a number of cities in the east, Mariupol on the coast, the Sea of Azov. The Russian Navy have been landing troops and armory, reportedly in Odessa. That's the main naval base for Ukraine, but a very weak navy, which was really taken apart by the annexation of Crimea by the Russians in 2014. So that was something that was overrun fairly quickly, it would seem. Other attacks we hear in Kharkiv, which is a big city to the south. We don't know what levels of damage there, but it would appear that it's military infrastructure that has been the main target of attacks by air, land and sea.
All right, Andrew Simmons, live for us there in the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv. Andrew, stay safe. Thanks for now. Well, let's just